Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Rampage Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on Friday night's episode of AEW Rampage. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review AEW Rampage, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. Pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete with a mega quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick to review.
Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but here's my number.
Rampage, baby. And speaking of Rampage, what a rampage Jude Bellingham had against Senegal last night. I've started the SmackDown review exactly the same. I'm gushing about England's performance last night.
Did Bellingham lay the SmackDown on Senegal? Is that how you started it?
I didn't quite say that. I said, what a sensational World Cup, but never more. That was a wrestling match on in the main event with Ricochet and Santos as well.
You ever seen that episode of The Simpsons where soccer comes to Springfield and Ken Brockman is commentating on it and they're just passing it around? It's like the ultimate like joke about how Americans who need 500 points in a game to keep their bloody attention spans watch soccer, where it's like, oh my God, it's only 2-1.
Yeah.
It's only 2-0. It's only 2-0.
I always love that clip of the English fans English football fans have a checkered history, let's say. But I've got to say, they are incredibly, I've never failed to be impressed with the chants that the English fans come up with. We've got the classics, obviously. Come on, England, come on, England. All that, right? Something very, whether it be Premier League, lower leagues especially, just very inventive chants to certain, you know, songs or whatever. And then there's that guy going, fight! And win for, like, I don't know, Boston United. Or no, it's an English team, actually. But yeah, like DC United. He's just a guy in a scarf, and that's all he said. Score a goal!
Fight and win. No, Jude Bellingham's incredible. The first 20 minutes. You know what? Wilborn, this is a goddamn wrestling podcast. So let's have a wrestling analogy.
Okay.
We discuss the World Cup, because God damn it, there's very little to actually talk about on this European pig, baby. I would describe the performance as not unlike that of Kazuchika Okada.
Oh!
We do, by express design, very little, right, for the first 20 minutes. This is a Southgate tactic. He does very little. Pass it around the back, pass it around the back, pass it around the back. We're not even tiring people out or teams out by having them chase the ball, because they are not willing to be adventurous, because we can get them on the counter. But just the more they keep just passing it around the back, passing it around the back, passing it around the back, kind of inviting a little bit of pressure midway through the first half. Like, that's when you get them. Like, that's when you get them. You think, oh, they're doing nothing here. Oh, Christ, that Bellingham has just gone 30 yards up the pitch with an absolutely incredible line break and surge. And he's just played the ultimate pass. Like, he's broke at least two lines at once.
Mm.
And then you get Foden to Kane. That was great. And then, like, obviously the first goal as well was just tremendous. Like, if it wasn't for that one player, Kylian Mbappe, I'd be so confident.
Yeah.
Even if we had Argentina or Brazil or Portugal or Spain in the quarters, I'd be like, this World Cup is there for the taking.
Yeah.
They are on no planet a better side than us. They might be as good. They might be capable of the brilliance that these teams with all that talent can have. I would happily have anyone in this quarterfinal except Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know you have to beat someone good. If you don't beat someone great with a great player who can just write the script and make it all about his insanely great individual performance, you have to beat the team that suppresses that player. So I don't go in for the, oh, you know what? It's a shame we've got this team. But my God, it is a shame we've got Kylian Mbappe because
this
it's
should
just
arguably
so
should
good.
Be the final. I think France Brazil, which I think is going to be the probable final. I'm an optimist when it comes to England. It's arguably too much in previous years, but I think probably if I was going to bet my house right now, as much as I love England, I'd say it's going to be a France Brazil final, which I think is going to be brilliant. And Sij and I have already booked Ronaldo versus PNL Pessi in the third place playoff.
I want that to be the final.
They'd be the only two players who'd actually care about the third place playoff because, like, well, that's the decider who gets the bronze medal at the World Cup, basically.
It's just a shame that...
I think France-England could have been a brilliant final.
Yeah, it's just a shame that, like, I'm just so scared of Mbappe. The kid is just absolutely unbelievable. Like, if we had them in the final, you'd think if we'd... Because I'd honestly bet us to take on any team that didn't have Mbappe playing. Where if we had... like Spain and then Portugal. I think, we can beat these. Mm. We've got the beating of these. And if you go to the final with that confidence and that attitude, then at least he made the final. But I don't even think we're going to get past the quarters because that's how highly I've rated Mbappe. He's not just the fastest player. He can use that pace unlike any other player. He can... It's everything in sport and in wrestling, just to, you know, tie this in a wrestling podcast. Yeah. It's about when to do things. You know, you got to hold and give, but do it at the right times.
Indeed.
As the great John Bond said, he knows when to accelerate. He knows how to just move that ball a little bit in front of him. And then he's already fast enough without the ability to use this pace like a genius. He's just amazing. So I am worried. But you know what? As long as we don't go 3-5-2 with three centre-backs and just soak that pressure, because he can beat any defence.
Yeah.
That's how good he is.
You have six centre-backs, don't really matter when you're playing.
Yeah, so I just really hope we stick to the 4-3-3. Go out on our shield, indeed. Because I don't like the idea, right, of just instantly going, oh, crap, when we play Senegal, we're rubbish for 20 minutes. I'll have a bit of a moan, but at the same time, you don't want to write your team off. Like, I do think the idea of support is very valid. So I don't want to be that guy because it's all about support and getting behind all of the boys. But when we drop Mason Mount out of that team and went for a more 4-3-3 and put Henderson in there, we just look like...
Henderson was so good.
Henderson was great. He has got that sort of dark arts experience where a lot of
people...
He's got that dog in him. But he's got a dark arts experience where you're thinking, well, why is he... Because I was getting a bit pissed off at Henderson. Why are we playing him? All he's doing is just passing the ball back to that back four. And back to the four, and back to the four, and back to the four. Because he knows when to time that one all-important run. He's got the experience of playing hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of games. So he knows that, right, okay, just hold it down, keep the shape, keep the shape, keep the shape. Right, they're starting to lose their concentration. Now's the time to surge forward. And lo and behold, he gets a goal. Or lo and behold, he sort of drags a defender out of position. So 4-3-3, stick to your guns. Don't... like, base your formation and your tactics around the team. Because for me, that's always a subconscious admission that the team will get, that the opposition will always get a little bit intrigued by. If you're, through your formation alone, demonstrating to the other side that we're scared of you, then that psychological advantage is just theirs. And you're just chasing the game, and it's a new system that you've not played in the tournament so far. It sends an indirect message to the players as well.
Yeah.
Like, right, okay. I'm scared of them. That's going to filter through to you. You're probably going to be scared of them. Just hold them in. Nah, we can play on the front foot as good as any side I've seen in this tournament. So please, Southgate, I want to support you. I feel like you can do it. Don't be a bitch.
Yeah, I will say this. I think Gareth Southgate is the best England manager I've ever seen. And
yes,
I think he deserves more respect.
In our lifetime, sir.
Yeah. It's not the thing is that a lot of the times when you come to these tournaments, and you go like, like when we were out in 2006, for example, and you go, well, no more Beckham, no more Owen. I know he wasn't the player that he was, but, you know, we're losing quite a few of our big players. It's this churn of amazing young talent. Foden and Bellingham won't even be arguably in their prime by the next World Cup.
Yeah, so they'll just be entering it or thereabouts.
Such an exciting prospect. But yeah, I watched the France game before the England game on Sunday and went into the Senegal game with a weird sense of calm because I was like, cool, well, we either go out here or we go out next Saturday.
Yeah.
And then when he scored those two goals, I literally went, if he does that against us, normally I'd be, you know, chucking stuff about, bloody hell, why are we playing? I'm just going, oh, it's not fair, that
it's
is
not
it.
Fair.
It's just not
good.
Fair.
He's too good.
But from one prestigious young talent to another, Darby Allin opened AEW Rampage against Cole Carter. I've got to say, I was pleasantly impressed by this. And I know I'm biased. It's the former Two Dimes.
It's the former Two Dimes.
But I thought for a match that you and I previewed, just went, yep, cool. I mean, you know, there's not a set, you know, a percentage point that we think that Darby Allin loses this match. But if you'd have said beforehand, this is going to go nearly 8 minutes, I'd have gone, that's going like 5 minutes too long. But I thought they told a great story here. You started off with Darby Allin coming out with Sting and Sting going to the back because he doesn't need him out there. And that was a story that would be mentioned later on. And he challenged for the Dynamite. That's also on Dynamite. What a bloody stacked show we've got coming up this week. Anyway, and there is Nick Comoroto in the ring. That name, of course, created by CM Punk, I believe. He's there. He's got a baseball bat. He hasn't got a baseball bat. He gets hit with a baseball bat.
Tries by a toothpick.
Darby Allin, because he does the whole, yeah, you wise guy.
Does Ethan Page not do that as well?
More on him later.
Yeah.
Drops the bat for Cole Carter, and Cole Carter, from his days in the mobs, like, hey, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth, goes to pick up the bat, and Darby Allin takes his head off with this high-speed plancha, gets him in, bell rings, but Cole Carter shoves Darby Allin off the top, he sort of catches himself on the top rope, and then gets powerbombed into it, and Cole Carter, yeah, dominates, chucks him from corner to corner, he smashes Darby Allin, does his only, like, this isn't my body. I'm only renting it. So I can just take all the bumps that you want. Gets chucked into the ring stairs. And as we go to a break, the crowd are chanting, you look green, Cole Carter. When we come back, Carter sets up for a powerbomb, but Darby Allin, who seems to feed off the pain, fires back up. Joint manipulation, hits a code red, that gets him an earful, goes up top, Carter hits an avalanche falcon arrow, which I thought looked great for a two count, goes to the 450, misses that, Darby Allin tries to get him in an armbar, Carter tries to escape, and Allin transitions it into a hammerlock scorpion death drop, coffin drop, gets him the 1-2-3.
I'm disappointed in you, Wilborn.
Oh.
You've buried the lead here.
Go on.
What did I say on the Rampage preview when I was discussing, right, everything in AEW or 90% of things in AEW happen for a reason? Yes, certain things will get abandoned. Like, remember when Arn Anderson was watching on with disappointment when Varsity Blondes were being rubbish?
Yes.
With the insinuation being he's going to manage them and get them back to ways. I was going to say winning ways, but they actually ways. Won much, yeah, to ways. I said that, well, it's not for nothing that Darby Allin has won two consecutive Rampage matches, because even though they don't have a rankings system or a visual representation of it, at least when people go on a spree of matches, it usually means they're going to be doing something, particularly on TV. Who did I say he was going to challenge?
Did you say he was going to
I said he was going to challenge Samoa Joe.
I was going to say, you say he was going to challenge
I
TNT
said that
champion.
That would be
yeah.
a great opponent. Joe versus Allin would be amazing, and like a bulb went off in my head when I thought, all right, well, he's going to win this match, and that follows the match he won against Anthony Green last week. That must mean there's going to be a story resulting from this. And this is the way around it should be. Wrestler wins fixture. Wrestler wins another fixture. Well, he's close to a championship. That's how it should be. Obviously, you know, grudge rivalry should happen. But, you know, at its core, that's what AEW is, and it's happened. And I knew he was going to go for Joe because I just thought, oh, that match is going to rule, actually. Regardless, I don't want to give no credit to Two Dimes here, particularly when he's been wrestling for less than 2 years, right? He did very well for that level of experience in the spot. But my God, Darby Allin is the literally most underrated professional wrestler on the planet. I know he's highly regarded. I know he's a former TNT champion. I know he's part of a very overact. I know he's delivered like almost as many classic AEW moments between the crazed stunts and the party matches with Sting and the emotional peaks of defeating Cody. Like, this guy has achieved as many great highlight reel sort of fabric of the company moments as much as anybody else. I maintain that he's still the most underrated wrestler in the entire world.
Yeah.
If you're a professional wrestler and you get called into the building on a Wednesday, or you get a little WhatsApp days before or weeks before, whatever, and you are told by Tony Khan, right, you're working Derby, you're thinking, yes, amazing. That guy is going to make me look absolutely incredible. In the case of Cole Carter, he is going to dimes. He is going to make me look so far advanced beyond my years that he should win most underrated and maybe even best wrestler every single year. Cole Carter, fine athlete, young, good-looking kid.
Yeah, good body.
Good body. He's never done anything where I thought, oh, he could be special. I've thought, oh, he's promising. He could probably be a very good wrestler at some point with the right schedule, the right attitude, the right booking, everything else. That goes into it. I didn't think, oh, sign him, he's a prospect. I thought, sign him. Oh, he might be a prospect, maybe. You've got enough prospects, you've got enough stars. He looks like a monster in this match because Darby Allin's just so goddamn good. And again, I'm not detracting from two dimes, but there were little moments where I thought, right, okay, this kid is very, very green, or at least he's got a thing that he knows how to do to get a minor reaction without really sort of owning the whole room. Like, he's got that smug, shit-eating grin where he looks very cocky. By the third or fourth time he went to the top turnbuckle to do that, I thought, right, okay, you've got your one thing you've been told how to do. Do that face because you're good-looking, which is resentful enough in itself.
Yes.
And you've got, like, a just really smug, like, loathsome expression on your face. The fact that he did, like, three or four times, I thought, right, okay, well, you need something else because that's, like, mid-card is all hell, body language and crowd psychology. But some of, like, just again, Darby Allin, just the way he bends his body and contorts his body and bumps his body around, he can make anyone look like a god. And he made two dimes look like a god in little snippets of this match. But again, I will be expecting my apology now.
Wilborn. Hell of a shout.
Adam Wilborn.
Hell of a shout. And I'm not going to get into the whole, what are we doing here sort of bad faith take Twitter thing. But like when Darby Allin got powerbombed onto the apron, a move that we've seen over there take people out for months, it was a bit like, oh, that's a bit much. And then I was like, oh, no, wait a second, it's Darby Allin. He does that for fun.
Yeah.
Like, I think he travels.
That's one of his character's attributes. Yeah. He's got an incredible threshold for pain.
By being sort of strapped in a body bag and just tied to the back of Sting's pickup truck.
And you know, there's a difference between a Cole Carter powerbomb to the apron and a Kevin Owens.
Exactly, yeah. Right, Keith Lee is being interviewed backstage, or at least there's an attempt at an interview by Renee Paquette. But before anything can really happen in the developments in terms of Swerve and Our Glory, in comes a former ROH TV champion Shane Taylor, who Renee Paquette introduces.
That's key. Carry on.
I would love to know your thoughts on this because I saw this all over Twitter over the weekend.
Of course he did.
Comes in, challenges Lee. He wants to, talks about their history, alludes to the fact that, leave people, blah, 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 you're a deserter sort of thing. Wants a tag team match at Final Battle. Shane T and JD Griffey versus Keith Lee and, I don't know, anyone Keith Lee can find, I suppose. And Swerve's face after this just comes in smiling. And Keith Lee's like, oh, yeah, your thoughts on all this? Because a lot of people were performative, let's say, on Twitter about this over the weekend.
Yeah, of course they were. Look, right. The blocking of this was pretty egregious, even by AEW, let's make a match via backstage interrupted segment, because Keith Lee's standing there. Like, is there a door? I never hear a creak.
Like that?
You never hear that?
No.
On Dynamite.
I'll just shut that door, sorry.
Thank you. So I never hear a creak. Why do the people never see who's standing pretty much to their immediate left?
Do you know what I hope it is? Remember the Rey Mysterio thing? You used to fire him up at the start of SmackDown.
Yeah. How ridiculous a mental image is that? Except it's not that ridiculous, or it is that ridiculous, but it's not that much more ridiculous then someone like teleporting,
yeah,
or someone on their tiptoes going, right, okay, I want to interrupt them. Can he see me? I'll just hide behind the curtain and go around. Just imagine what Shane Taylor's doing in the 2 minutes before that. He's having a conversation that he has to have on television, okay? So it's fake. We know this. But if you were to use your mind and think, right, okay, if this is real, what's happening here? Is he, like, lurking behind the curtain? Does the second that, right, when the show starts, I just need to...
What does it sound like?
Boom, 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 boom. Oh, it's a show that you've been waiting now. And then I'm pumping in your chest. Little rampage, baby. Friday night. You know what that means? Tony decided to give me a call for f***ing once. I finally got a f***ing job to do. Thanks, Tony. God damn it. Anyways, rampage. So, like, Shane Taylor hears this. And he's like, right, okay, the show's starting. Okay. I don't know what's on the show. Because I haven't seen the format sheet.
No.
So what I'm going to do is, right, just in case... Keith Lee is going to cut a promo tonight. I'm just going to hide behind the AEW logo board thing,
yeah,
where people cut these promos. Well, Keith Lee wasn't going to... Did they say we're going to hear from Keith Lee?
I think we were going to hear from... I don't remember now. Let me check my notes. I swear they might have said, hear from Swerve in Our Glory.
Okay. If that's the case. Because, yeah, they do generally... We're going to advertise this segment. It's 30 seconds of an interrupted promo. Right. That being the case, you've still got an hour to just stand there. Right, okay. You're Shane Taylor, you're thinking, right, okay, well, it's the last 20 minutes, I should be fine because Mark Henry does that bit and then they do the main event. So, yeah, they usually start with a match or an in-ring promo. They don't start with these things. So, basically, any time between... Ooh, 8 minutes into the show and the 42nd. I'm just going to stand here and just wait.
And I hope it's a backstage interview because if it's out there in the ring, I'm going to have to hightail it out there. Pretty sharpish.
On the way, en route, I'll have to tell the sound guy to cue up my bloody music.
Yeah.
It's just bloody ridiculous. That is a very, very long-winded way of me saying I have significantly more of a problem with that stupid mind's eye detail than... the introduction of Shane Taylor into AEW television.
Yes.
Because, oh my God, why degrade yourself by pretending you're stupid? Who's that guy? They just told you. What's he doing here? They've just told you. How did he know Keith Lee? They've just told you.
Yes.
Through a level of exposition at which WWE would blush. Not quite. They say that, you know, the Usos and... my dad, Rey Mysterio. Let's not go nuts. That's a bit of hyperbole. But they told you with exposition that you would not hear on any other actual TV show. Like, it's almost comically bad. That's the thing that you should be critiquing.
Yeah, here. I agree.
It's the terrible dialogue and the level of exposition. Because these two characters know what they are saying to each other, right? They are having this conversation, which is woefully contrived, for my benefit,
okay?
There must be a much more elegant means of doing this. They haven't arrived at it in this particular example, but people are going, who's he? They've just told you, you stupid arsehole, except you're not that stupid. You probably are stupid, but realistically, I don't understand, right, the people who pretend to be stupid on behalf of theoretical, stupid, casual, quote-unquote fans... to bury AEW, you're just making yourself look like an idiot. You're just making yourself look so stupid. Concerned trolling about a consumer who, in all likelihood, does not exist.
Well, by that argument, no one new can ever arrive in WWE.
Are you a vignette? You must need a vignette.
Like bollocks. I can understand you going, oh, God, someone else new, and we'll get into more like... oh, so-and-so is all elite and all that. We always call them out on
It's just an AEW grifter thing. It's just an AEW podcaster grift, right?
Hey, I'm just getting annoyed. I'm sorry.
Well, no, it's fine. It's fine. I like the rant as well, mate. I like the rant as well. What's the difference between a character being introduced? One of the characters, or the commentator, just give you a very quick little bit of supplemental context. Context.
Doesn't count.
Supplementary context. Right, this is this person and they're here for this reason. Cool, I guess. Right. What's the difference between that and the Raw after WrestleMania? He is such and such. You don't know who he is. The crowd know who he is, so or she is, so that you ought to infer from this that they're a star that you haven't heard of, but they're a bit of an under-the-radar emerging prospect type, and they're going to tell you who they are.
Yeah.
I cannot recall a discourse so frequent pre-AEW on Twitter, which existed in the same age as NXT, just to make that clear, where all these people are going, don't know who this person is. Don't know who this person is. Well, you do, dickhead, because they've just told you. But it's just a bad faith podcasting grift, and you know what? Like, I have more concerns about this particular character being introduced, or characters who get introduced in this way because of the excess of the roster and all the rest of it. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I don't know who someone is when I've just been told. What's your name?
Adam Wilborn.
Don't know who that is.
Have you...
Of course I do. You've just said you...
Can you tell me you won the 2016 Royal Rumble? Because after the third guy came out, I just turned it off because I didn't know who he was. AJ Styles? Never seen this guy before.
AJ Styles?
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's UnitedHealthcare insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Right, we got a brief recap of how bloody devoured the Dark Order are because Preston Vance has left them and how happy the...
RFO, I think.
Rouge family. I'm not keeping up with his bollocks. The latest family office are they're happy. He's a handsome chap. I'm glad he's taking the mask off. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
Then the Acclaim come out.
Not unlike Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, I can see that.
He's not as handsome, but very few are. Not unlike Ryan Gosling.
Yo, listen. I like the fact that JR says it along with them now. Acclaimed come out to get interviewed in the ring. There's shots at Jeff Jarrett and TNA in Caster's rap this time. And Bowens, you know, references the fact that those arseholes interrupted them recently. It says, you've got to wait in line. We're going to give it to the best tag team in AEW that's not us. It's going to be FTR, guys. But of course, before that can happen, out come Gun Club. I love... Gun Club's music I really like right now because it's the perfect... Really like it at the moment.
Long-time listener, great man, Fraser Cranium.
Yes.
Described this as he just wants to have a nice bath with some candles and he's getting knocked on the door by, like, any... Like, his mates going, no, I'm having a moment here.
Yeah.
It's just so beautiful. It's like spa music.
Yeah. So they come out and say, we're the best tag team and... screw you, Dad, actually, effectively. And then out comes Jeff Jarrett and his gang. And I'm thinking, right, whatever you do, don't hit anyone with a guitar here because you're going to get huge babyface reaction if you clock one of the gun clubs with the guitar. Sonjay Dutt argues and Billy Gunn tells everyone to shut up and he's hugely over, of course, his and me daddy. And FTR comes out. They're the best. And they walk through everyone shoving their belts in their faces and they shake hands. And the tag team title match is not set for revolution, as we'd called. but for Wednesday, and on the graphic that I saw, for the TNT Championship, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
But what did you think about all this?
I've got two different thoughts, right? First is that I always say there's a good version and a bad version of things that are of everything. Sometimes there's a good and bad version of things that are ordinarily bad, and there's a good and bad version of things that are ordinarily good. This was a good version of something that's ordinarily bad in that I can absolutely 1,000,000% buy that Jeff Jarrett wants to get a promo train started because he's an inveterate carny who wants to be on television at every conceivable opportunity. Ditto Gun Club, whose MO is just getting on telly, getting in the psyche of FTR. This is within each character's MO, okay? And then it gets better because the interruption is something that fans actually want. A big FTR versus Acclaim tease, which we are to learn later in the show, that it's not just a tease, it's a, you know, promotion, a hype for what's going to come. I am going to let this play out. They might have this absolutely incredible angle up their sleeves. However, to my cynical, maybe misplaced cynicism, I don't want to be that guy who goes, oh, this is automatically rubbish and I can see where it's going to go, particularly when I've loved the last two episodes of Dynamite, okay? I'm trying to be the let it play out guy, the just, you know, they've earned my let it play out credentials, speaking personally. It sure as hell seems to me, Adam Wilborn, that FTR versus the Acclaimed for the first time on Dynamite is a kind of a glorified angle, or at least a pretext for whatever FTR are doing at ROH Final Battle, by which
that's
I mean...
That, well, wait a second, that's this weekend.
Yeah, the timing of this is very, very sus and potentially very disheartening. If it plays out as it does, I don't want to bury it before it happens.
Yes.
I'll bury it when it happens. And I'll preemptively bury it a little bit.
Yeah.
This is where ROH becomes a massive imposition. What even is ROH? It's just some thing with three different letters and more different championships, just diluting everything.
Mm.
It just goes to show that all monopoly in pro wrestling is bad, irrespective of who holds the monopoly. Vince McMahon, always bad because he always did WCW and ECW in his own image and wrapped it around his own storyline quirks as a booker. All monopoly is bad, because even if I like AEW, I don't want other companies to be AEW, which ROH essentially is, except with just lesser brand value. FTR versus the Acclaimed, okay. You could build the hell out of this thing and do it at Revolution. And at this moment in time, if you want to build a title match, and right, who are the two hottest teams we've got? FTR and the Acclaimed. When's our next pay-per-view? Revolution. This match is already hot. People already want it. Both acts are all the way over. What if we build on top of this and make Revolution and the tag match feel like something really special indeed? That's gone now because you're doing it on TV, I think, for Gun Club to screw FTR out of it. There are hints that I've guessed this, and they don't take Nostradamus to foresee what's happening here, because one, Gun Club are in the segment that set this up, and two, the Acclaimed were talking about at some point having to contend with Jarrett and Lethal. So you can see how those two matches happen kind of as a result of this one match, FTR versus the Acclaimed.
Very convenient, yeah.
I miss the days when it just felt like the pay-per-view was taking ages to get here because you were so hyped. I miss the days when you were allowed to be so hyped about one particular match because it felt elusive, premium, unmissable. If you don't catch it here, you're probably not going to catch it for several months after the fact. You're missing out if you don't watch this match after it's been built out the ass for ages. Unless for 12 minutes before what I would describe as the expected interference happens. Unless those 12 minutes are like 12 of the best minutes you've seen in tag team wrestling all year, you're just kind of killing my interest in what could be an absolutely massive, massive match, right? And look, Revolution 2020, Bucks versus Omega and Paige.
Oh, I remember that. It was quite good.
It was awesome. They'd interacted quite frequently in eight-man tags, all four men, and in a four-way tag of Bash at the Beach. So I'm not saying you can't have them not touch, a la Cody versus MGF at Revolution. There's different ways of building a match, but the fact that you're wasting, or potentially wasting, because I can't see this going to a definitive result
and
being a 30-minute classic or whatever, or the best version of itself, shall we say.
Indeed.
The fact that you're potentially wasting your biggest AEW tag team title match right now to build a far inferior or less buzzworthy ROH tag team title match at Final Battle. For me, misplaced priorities out the ass. And I'm sorry, Mega fans, forgive me. I'll probably repeat this verbatim on the Dynamite preview.
Yeah, exactly. We'll talk more about it on Wednesday for that. I'm begging you, Tony. No more signings. No more belts. Tony Khan.
We're going to do it anyway.
When's he going to do it? Like, when is he going to do it?
I think he's going to do it on the Rampage, baby. In. Oh, no, I got this.
90s!
Yeah! Hikaru Shida is defending the Regina De Wave Championship against Bunny off the back of stuff between them.
Cool.
Right, let's talk. Because Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal had just wandered down and everyone else had left at this point. They're just like, everyone casually, yep, cool, handshakes and see you later. Because it was time for Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal versus Private Party and all the intrigue that comes with them, obviously, being with the firm. Jay Lethal, say Cassidy start. I could tell Jay Lethal was having the best time doing this match, and I kind of got into it as a result of that. Like he was wooing, he was tagging with Jeff Jarrett, which must just be so much fun. Jeff Jarrett strutting around. I want to give a great shout out as well to Isaiah Cassidy, who did a great sell of like, I can't get to my corner. And when he eventually did, like got out of it and pulled all this mad stuff to get to Mark Quinn, I thought it was really good. Thought Matt Hardy was going to get murdered by Satnam Singh at one point. And the heels dominate for the most part. Like I say, Mark Quinn gets the hot tag, hits Lethal with a drop kick, takes out Jarrett with a dive to the outside. They hit the silly string on Jay Lethal. Quinn goes for the 450, but Lethal gets out of the way. Jarrett breaks up a cradle and then holds Quinn in position for the stroke slash lethal injection combo and the win for Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal here.
Yeah, that tandem finisher is a great idea that potentially needs to be road tested a little bit more. Look, this was quite fun, I guess. It just felt like the commercial break happened and then like straight to the finish.
Mm.
That was a bit weird. Maybe I wasn't paying that much attention. I did watch it this morning, bleary-eyed, because I did not set my alarm because I was not interested particularly in watching this show. Felt to me like, yes, I did like the Isaiah Cassidy face and peril spot that you've highlighted. Other than that, it felt like four lads having a bit of fun with Jeff Jarrett strut.
Yes.
Whether they were
like a house
involved,
show bit.
Yeah, yeah. Whether they were getting involved with them on the same team or whether they were mocking it in the case of Private Party. And then it just kind of went to a finish.
Mm.
If you told me October 9th, 2019, the second ever episode of Dynamite, Private Party defeat the Young Bucks in the first round of the inaugural tag team title tournament in an absolutely fantastic breakthrough match. If you had told me, right, okay, in 4 years, 3 years?
3 years.
3 years' time that, Private Party are going to lose the TV match to Jeff Jarrett. By the way, having never won the tag team titles, you'd think, that was Tony Khan comp book then.
Yes.
After a really, really promising start, like an incredibly promising start. Oh, it's a shame he can't book because he can't be losing to Jeff Jarrett. I understand that doesn't scan as much of a disgrace now as it would have done on October 9th because, you know, Private Party have regressed. I think they were regressing before the massive expansion, before the absolute inability to do impulse control on the part of Tony Khan. But it's still impulse control.
Mm.
It's still signing upon signing upon signing upon signing. It's still the optics of having such a promising tag team lose to Jeff Jarrett in 2022 was still bad. Look, send these boys to Dragon Gate.
Yeah.
Send these fellas to Dragon Gate, Private Party, because they still hold so much potential. So much
absolutely.
Potential.
They some need glimpses of it here, yeah.
They need a loop. They need to get tight. I'm starting to wonder, and I've wondered this for quite some time, this company is so future-focused. Let's get him over. Right, even before they're over, that's another young guy that we think can really make us some money. They are so future-focused, and simultaneously, they lack the mechanisms almost entirely to get that future ready for the next spots because they don't do house shows. They don't really do excursions. I don't know what they expect to happen. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no,
what are you expecting to happen from this? Like, how are you expecting to see improvement? Which would be fine if you were just very present-focused and you were just revolving your entire storylines around a group of 12 to 16 guys and everyone else was... But you know, you're not. You're trying to get Yuta, Garcia, Private Party, Jungle Boy, Sammy Guevara, Darby Allin, MGF, who has got over. Obviously, Darby Allin and Jungle Boy have as well. And then you've got, like, just so many other young talents. Get them over. Let's try and get them over. Them next, them next, them next, them next, yeah. them next. And at this point, there are as many, if not more, failures than successes.
Yeah. And I know you're concerned, but don't worry. There's going to be more firm stuff later okay. to look forward to. Saraya sat down with Renee Paquette, talks about her first match in 5 years at Full Gear. She talks about how amazing it was to have her brother there, of course, how emotional it all was, how special it was, and the fact there was 3 women's matches on the pay-per-view. And she says, look, I appreciate what Toni Storm had to say, but I want that world title too. Which is an exciting prospect, as we sort of alluded to on the preview.
Look, I like this. Nothing to do cartwheels over, but just a nice little couple of minutes on the wrestling show. Anytime you have a bit of chemistry between your interviewer and your subject, it's always good because you have to advance storylines and character arcs through this vehicle. And if you get two people who can convincingly work a real-life conversation, great. That means I can invest in what I'm seeing. And I think it was a very, very gentle step forward for Saraya in that she actually put the women's division over as opposed to kind of frame it as this thing that I need to make better because I'm the former ex-WWE star. And it's a bit rubbish, actually, isn't it? I'm here. It's my house, so I'm going to save the day. Even though that's not untrue, it kind of does need saving or it needs a lot more attention. You don't say that quite part loud. She'd been guilty of that. This felt like a minor course correction because she did put at least 2 women over and she articulated, I want that title. It's not going to be bloody easy, but I want it.
Yes.
Which is a marked departure from what she'd been saying.
Just patting him on the head like she did initially. And also, I should mention, there was a bit of clarification regarding Women's Revolution on SmackDown. Riddick Moss informed us it was Emma that did that. So thanks for sorry for all that. Athena versus Danny Moe. I was in a good mood watching Rampage. I will say this because I just watched England beat Senegal. And
watch it on Saturday morning at the first available opportunity.
I did not know.
The World Cup ruined my wrestling enjoyment. Like.
But I tell you what, I did enjoy Athena. I love Danny Moe from the brief things that I saw of her. But I enjoyed getting her ass kicked. Forearm suplexes, Falcon Arrow. And I was like, cool, this can be the finish for me. I'm happy. Danny Moe did kick out, though. And Athena was like, guess
didn't she do the lift the head up thing instead?
Sorry, yes, she didn't kick out. What am I talking about? He's like, oh, not yet. And then she decides, might have to kick another referee's ass, actually. She almost gets rolled up. It gets kicked and goes, nah, not today. Forearm, and then the sort of, I don't know, it's like a backbreaker into a code breaker almost that she does. It's like a knees to the face thing. 1, 2, 3. Both matches like, actually, I want to kick some more ass. So she's just chucking Mo around on the outside. Referees come out to stop her. She doesn't care anyway. She wrecks her, calls out Mercedes Martinez, who, of course, she's going to face on the weekend at Final Battle. And I thought she was going to attack Aubrey Edwards again. Yeah. God, what a reinvention for Athena.
Love Athena. I wish she wasn't doing ROH stuff. But hopefully, if she wins that belt, she can be on TV more or she narrowly avoids it or whatever. Just more Athena in an AEW context because I just think her and Storm and her and Hater and she could really mix it up with the actual big guns. No offense to Mercedes Martinez, but it's not really worked, has it? No. It might, she's suffered through injury and all the rest of it, but she hasn't really lived up to her rep. We'll see in Final Battle. What I love about professional wrestling is the sheer potential it has as a storytelling medium, which I think AEW has explored wonderfully and really sort of elevated a lot of my fandom as a result. It's also the best storytelling medium when you keep it incredibly simple and that simple stuff is just extremely effective. I love being able to go, oof, when you see a simple move. When you just see, I watch people get dropped on their heads all day. Amazing. Probably shouldn't do it all that often. And if you don't have to do that, don't do it. These forearms are amazing. They really, really get me sort of in that sort of combat zone, animalistic frame of mind where you're watching, it's like, get in. And if a forearm can do it, then the rest of her work's going to be fantastic. Like, Athena's been incredible in AEW of late.
Yeah, absolutely. Love what they've done with her. Not quite the same, but yeah, in terms of like Powerhouse Hobbs taking back the Spinebuster is like, oh, that's a finisher.
Yeah.
That ends it. This isn't just a transition thing, but yeah. Love Athena, and this has absolutely got me intrigued for the pay-per-view at the weekend, which will also feature Samoa Joe versus Juice Robinson for the ROH TV title. Juice Robinson now All Elite. Again, another one where I'm like, stop it, Tony, stop signing people. All right, you can have that one, because I like Juice Robinson, man.
I'd have signed Juice Robinson all day, every day in 2018 and 19. Feel like he's regressed, not as over as he once was, not as interesting as he once was. It's signing too far for me. Hopefully he's literally only been signed because there's a streaming deal for ROH in the works and he needs to bulk up the roster, because, look, it's a good talent who's possibly out of form. No, do not need that.
Okay, fair enough. Busy week for Samoa Joe. Darby Allin challenged him to a TNT championship match.
That timing's sus as well.
Yeah.
I don't know why he'd beat Darby unless you're not going to beat Darby. But we'll talk about that in the preview.
Exactly. And then we got the back and forth. Best friends brought axes. And Mark Henry says, it's a lumberjack match, but you can't take axes to the ring. And Orange Cassidy wants to get a few more words in, but unfortunately, Mark Henry says, which was, of course, a lumberjack match for the All-Atlantic Championship between Orange Cassidy and QT Marshall. I love QT Marshall in these sorts of spots. I think he does a sensational job.
When I'm watching it, I do. I don't necessarily get excited.
No, yeah.
But when the experience happens, it's usually very, very good.
Not to disregard a lot of things that happened here. Mordecai's All Elite? What's going on here? You see this? Kevin Thorne as part of the Lumberjacks.
What?
Huh? I think he was in a picture-in-picture. I'll swear JR went, reckon for? And it makes sense. Look, they've just got people add to the Lumberjacks.
I think that's the least of AEW's problems. They don't need people. They've got people.
I was going to say, you want
to geek them up, though. There's a certain level of talent. In a Lumberjack match, it's either axe associated with the...
Yeah, so you have factory and best friends in there.
And then he can't have, like, hook there or something.
Can you imagine? That would be quite good, because he'd just stand there and eat crisps.
Missed opportunity for a gag.
Yeah. But yeah, it was just so surreal to see realtor Kevin Thorne, a.k.a. Mordecai, just hanging around and occasionally sticking a boot in someone.
So bizarre.
Anyway, at one point, Orange Cassidy gets chucked to the outside, and all the lumberjacks around him, and he brutally kicks all of them, of course. But the main thing about this match, of course, wasn't the championship. It was the argument between Ethan Page and Matt Hardy. Thoughts?
I've got so few.
Really? We're doing this now, are we?
This is AEW's version of Dexter Lumis and The Miz. The amount of build... Like, the disproportion is just outrageous here. The amount of build and rubbish build going into a match that's got no chance of being very good is what's the point? This is genuinely a waste of valuable TV resource. I could be having so much fun watching great stuff. I could be reminded, for example, of why I should give a toss about Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia right now, because it feels like much of this year has been wasted when it comes to them two. I still think they're great, but the amount of TV time that's gone into building Yuta and Garcia, and I know they're going to have a great match at Final Battle, I don't care about it because it's the third one they've had for that title this year. Minimal build for it. I've seen it already. They're nowhere near... you've spent so much money and TV time on Moxie Danielson, Jericho, and Claudio, and Regal, to really try and get Garcia and Yuta over. And it's failed because I don't care about this match. And it's not just me. I think a lot of people are like,
yeah.
use the TV time that you're not using on Hardy and Paige, who aren't really getting the stuff over at all, on just more reminders of the people I've been told to invest in throughout the year. Why should I be investing in them again? Remind me through your television vehicle, because otherwise it just feels like a lot of stuff that they don't care about as much anymore. It's just happening in front of me and I'm bored.
Yeah, I had no sympathy. When Ethan Page was like, you leave, but you got to leave. I think it was Isaiah Cassidy here. He's staying because he's part of the firm and we're lumberjacks, but you got to fuck off, Matt Hardy. And he was all like, oh, no, guys. And I was like, I don't care. Show me QT Marshall bumping around for Orange Cassidy. That's all I really care about.
And the
fact that they've got, like, Tony Khan's there. He's got a big, big whiteboard, right? And I stand there and he's got, okay, guys. On this whiteboard, we got, let's say, Jamie Hayter's going to be a babyface. Jamie Hayter versus Britt Baker for the women's title. We got MJF versus Bryan Danielson. We've got the Elite versus House of Black for the Trios titles. We got the Acclaimed versus FTR. But the big question is, what are we doing for Matt Hardy's big match at the pay-per-view? I don't care.
Nah.
I don't care. And I don't want it to be like, oh, this is the big issue. I've already got distracted because Mordecai's one of the Lumberjacks. I don't need any more distractions from this Lumberjack match. Anyway, go to a break. We come back. Goes for the beach break, but his bloody back gives out. And Cassidy manages to fight back, though, and hit a spinning DDT. But the factory saved Marshall, pull him out of the ring so he doesn't get hit with the orange punch. So Marshall goes to pile drive Cassidy on the ring apron. But Danhausen shows up to curse Marshall. Danhausen gets pulled off the apron. There's a big brawl, all the Lumberjacks, and Cassidy jumps onto all of them, and they all brawl to the back. And then who should appear? I forgot about this bit. Who should appear? Penelope Ford. And as Cassidy's going up top, there's Kip Sabian. Remember him?
Right.
He shoves Orange Cassidy off the top into a diamond cutter. I was like, oh my God, he's losing the All Atlantic Championship. No, near fall. Marshall goes for another diamond cutter. Cassidy catches him with the orange punch. Beach break gets him the 1-2-3. He retains the All-Atlantic Championship. Right, we'll do... And then, there's another and then coming. And then he brawls with Sabian to the back. Let's stop there for the time being. Thoughts on the finish of this match and the return of Kip Sabian?
Look, again, one of those things where if you're in the building, you've been having a lovely old time watching this. Didn't feel like a title match. It's just a bit of fun. Again, in the main event of a TV show, I can't really invest in it at that level. But QT Marshall bumping like an asshole, just showing all the ass. This guy pulls Moonies for a living, and he's really, really good at it. And just the moment where he's about to do something, presumably a powerbomb to Cassidy on the apron, and to break his neck.
Yes.
Good. You're an evil man. That's what you should be into doing, even if you're not, in fact, going to do it because it's going to get reversed. Is curse counter to Danhausen where he just stuck up the V's. Just so childish, but so good. And yeah, he spent the majority of this match just making Cassidy's stuff look very credible and also not credible, but in a very funny way because that's just how he bumps and he's very funny. What are they doing with Kip Sabian? I understand they want to do something. I understand that, look, in the pandemic, he was there. Very few people could be there, but he was there. He was able to be there and he showed out. And then he got a bad injury, and they're being loyal to Kip Sabian. Kip Sabian had an idea that might have worked in 2019. Oh, has he got a box on his head? Well, that's interesting. Oh, he's still got the box on his head. It's all right. Okay. Who could possibly care about that when you've got CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, Adam Cole, Swerve, Nor Glory, Athena, Tony Storm, like Shibata, you know, Kojima, all of these talents who've just been in AEW, making it much better. It's like the Gargano thing. Sorry, if I just wait a couple of weeks when people are like, there hasn't been that hot debut in a while, I can come in AEW and really sort of, oh Christ, there's another one. Right, if I just wait 3 weeks after that one, all right, okay, there's another one on Rampage after the Dynamite I've just talked about. You can't tell this kind of story in the modern age. Even MGF struggled to get this Pillman stuff over. You were meant to be asking every day, oh God, I miss MGF. It gets worse every day. Where is he? Because the news cycle is so relentless. Tony Khan is so undisciplined with the rest of his booking that you can't cultivate a like multi-stranded sort of week-to-week-to-week-to-week-to-week mystery anymore, because on all of those weeks, you're trying to do things quietly in the background. The foreground is too exciting.
Yes.
So you just can't do it anymore. But, so he does all this, and then he plays just the worst composite Batman comic book villain figure you've ever seen. He looks like an arsehole in there. Like, I think Kip Sabian must be a really nice lad. When I was watching him in that pack match, I thought, my God, you've spent a year building this character. If you spent all that long workshopping ideas, you could have done a better one than this because it's goofy. It's so bad. It's like, it's as fake as Eddie Kingston is real. That's how I would describe
I like that.
Kip Sabian character. Then he loses to Pac rather unceremoniously in 10 minutes in a match that, because Pac was in it, had no right to be as mid as it was.
Mm.
And then he goes away.
On 0 hour, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah. All out 0 hour. And now he's back teasing an All-Atlantic title match?
Yeah.
How does this work? Terrible. They're going to build a match. They're going to do a stupid 3-star rampage match out of this. But there's no logical reason for it to take place. Again, I'll let it play out. I'll deal the hands as they come. But that was my inkling. It doesn't take, like, no rocket scientist. Oh, he's interfered.
Yeah.
The babyface might take...
I mean, you can just ask.
Yeah, just ask.
Genuinely just ask Orange Cassidy and he'll say, yeah, cool.
Well, that's another plot hole. Everyone who doesn't ask looks like an asshole because they're not watching the TV. Did you see what happened after it went off the air?
Well, is this the...
House of Blake.
Yes, I was going to say, post... After that happened, the Lumberjacks are all brawling and I'm like, cool, big brawl to end the show again on Rampage. The lights go out and I was like, oh, business is about to pick up. There's the House of Black. They murder everyone.
I got scared first. Did you see the colour? It was tinted.
Yes.
It looked like Hell in a Cell 2019. I was like, turn that off now.
For a split second, yeah, the lights go down, the lights come back up, it's red light, and the House of Black are in the ring, and they start attacking people, and the light doesn't change. And yeah, I was exactly the same. I was like, no, put the lights back on.
Yeah, put the lights back on, actually.
And they did, obviously. Interesting, weird thing. So they're going to hit the Dante's Inferno double team thing with Matthews and King on Ortiz. And Malakai Black goes, ah, no, not him. And then they hit it on Serpentico. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then they go to the outside to kick the crap out of everyone. And I'm fairly certain the first person that Malakai Black kicked was Ortiz. So I don't know what's going on there. Regardless, the House of Black kill everyone as we get off the air.
Aye, another good beat down. The Ortiz things, maybe they're just leaving an opportunity there. Maybe they're just parking something. Do something with Ortiz here. We can revisit that if we don't think of anything else for him to do, and he can join the House of Black or something. The off-air thing, did you see what they did with Cutler?
No.
They isolated Cutler, who, like an idiot, was just filming his own beatdown, and it was really funny. And they put him through a table, and Malakai Black pulled up a chair, folded it, sat on it, and was saying, you're just a small part of the big problem with this company.
Oh, I saw some tweets about this.
So he's teasing the Elite Showdown at some point. So that was really nice.
Yeah.
But if, maybe because he was already there as a lumberjack, this is not a capital D. This is a lowercase deft.
Question mark at the end of it, yeah.
Deft. Because you're making use of someone who's already there for a reason and it's kind of good. Better than doing a law promo about the Elite.
Yeah.
Wilborn, I'm the biggest Elite fan in this office, you think?
Yeah, that's fair to say.
I've written a book about AEW, which incidentally you can buy right now if you're going to want some reading to do with the holidays. You know, you love your family, but only so much. And you want some quiet time away from them. You're thinking, oh, well, you know, I've got some time off. If you're lucky enough over Christmas or whichever holiday you celebrate. And you're thinking, yeah, what if I get bored of all my Christmas presents? Or what if I don't get any Christmas presents? Then you order yourself one. Becoming All Elite, 120,000 passionate, insightful words all about the formation and indeed rise of AEW. You can order it just wherever you live, on Amazon. I'm the biggest Elite guy. Much of that book is focused on the Elite and their rise, okay?
Yeah.
The prospect of the Elite and the House of Black, even for me, I'm like, oh, that's cringe. Like, I can imagine cringing heavily throughout this. That was a good little start.
Yes, exactly. Well, let us know your thoughts on AEW Rampage on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
MSidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. As I said, make sure you subscribe to WhatCulture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from. For daily wrestling podcasts, myself and Hamlet have already reviewed SmackDown earlier on today. And me, Hamlet, and Sidgwick will be back later on today to look ahead to Monday Night.
Row.
But for now, this has been the Rampage Review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.